Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we're looking into something, well, really ancient, but incredibly relevant. It's wisdom that speaks directly to our modern lives, our all struggles. We're taking a deep dive into Psalm 6 from the Bible. It's this raw, very personal prayer, comes from King David.
And it's known as one of the penitential Psalms. Basically, a place where intense emotion, real spiritual desperation just pours out.
Exactly. It's that kind of lament where someone's laying bare their sorrow, pleading for help, often tied to feeling guilt or just immense suffering.
Yeah, so our goal today, our mission for this deep dive is really to get to the heart of this prayer. We'll look at, you know, its structure, the feelings, the themes.
Right.
And then the really crucial part. How does this ancient cry connect to you today? What's the practical takeaway? Think of it as a shortcut to some pretty profound insights.
Okay, let's jump right in then. Psalm 6, David. He's in a tough spot here. We're talking intense physical pain, emotional turmoil, spiritual, well, desperation.
That sums it up perfectly. He's not sugarcoating anything. It starts almost immediately with this plea for mercy. Verses 1 to 3, he says, O Lord, rebuke me not in thine anger, neither chasten me in thy hot displeasure.
So he's asking for gentleness, not God's full anger.
Precisely. He knows he's weak. He actually says, I am weak. And the physical pain is intense. My bones are vexed. That word vexed, it's not just slightly annoyed. It means deeply troubled, agitated.
Consumed by it almost.
Yes, exactly. But it's not just physical. He adds, my soul is also sore vexed. The mind, emotions, spirit, it's all caught up in this.
Mm-hmm.
And then that question, that really human question. But thou, O Lord, how long? You can feel the weariness in that. It's a complete picture of suffering, body and soul.
How long? Wow. Yeah. I think everyone resonates with that at some point, that feeling of when will this end? So what does he do next? Stuck in that waiting.
He keeps pleading, verses 4 and 5.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is he doesn't list his good deeds, doesn't try to justify himself. No, none of that. He appeals purely to God's nature, to mercy, to steadfast love. He begs, return, O Lord, deliver my soul. Oh, save me for thy mercy's sake.
For mercy's sake, not because he deserves it.
Exactly. And then he makes this almost practical point about death. He says, in death there is no remembrance of thee. In the grave, who shall give thee thanks?
That's quite an angle. Like, keep me alive so I can keep praising you.
Basically, yeah. It's rooted in wanting to continue that relationship, that service to God. It's quite powerful.
And the way he describes his own anguish, it's just so visceral. The imagery is incredibly strong.
Oh, absolutely. Verses 6 and 7, he holds nothing back. It's almost uncomfortably intimate. He says, he's weary with my groaning, and that all the night make I my bed to swim. I water my couch with my tears.
Swimming in tears. I mean, you can just picture that level of grief.
Right. It's not just a metaphor. It conveys this overwhelming physical release of sorrow. His body is weeping. And then he says, mine eye is consumed because of grief. It waxeth old because of all mine enemies.
His eyesight is failing from grief.
Yeah, waxeth old means decaying, failing. The stress, the grief, maybe pressure from enemies, it's affecting his physical sight. It shows how deeply intertwined everything is, physical, emotional, spiritual. The lines are completely blurred.
That really paints a picture of just utter exhaustion and despair. You feel the weight of it. But then the psalm takes this sharp turn, doesn't it, towards the end?
It really does. It's one of the most dramatic shifts you'll find. Suddenly, in verses 8 to 10, the lament transforms into this bold declaration of confidence.
Out of nowhere, almost.
It feels that way. After pouring out all that pain, he declares, depart from me, all ye workers of iniquity, for the Lord hath heard the voice of my weeping. He knows he's been heard.
Not just hoping, but stating it as fact.
Exactly. He says, the Lord hath heard my supplication, the Lord will receive my prayer. He's so sure, he tells his enemies to back off. He even predicts their sudden shame. Let all mine enemies be ashamed and sore vexed.
Oh.
Let them return and be ashamed suddenly.
Wow. From the absolute depths to total assurance. That's quite a journey in just 10 verses.
It's incredible.
So, okay, let's unpack this. What's the ancient wisdom here? What can we learn from David's incredibly raw prayer that still hits home today?
Well, I think the first, maybe most radical thing is this. It is absolutely okay to grieve and to do it openly before God. David is unfiltered. He cries, he questions, he pleads, no holding back.
Which is so different from how we're often told to act, right? Be strong, keep it together.
Exactly. Society often pushes for composure. Psalm 6 gives you permission, you know, permission to be completely undone. It suggests that real strength might actually start with admitting you're not strong, with being radically vulnerable. Think about times you felt you had to hide your pain. This psalm says, let it out. Your real sorrow, it has a place. It's honored.
That feels liberating, just hearing that. It's a powerful message against just performing strength. And it also shows what David's hope was really based on, right?
It really does. Which leads to the second point. Mercy is central to God's nature. That's the bedrock. David doesn't build a case for why he should be helped.
Right. No list of achievements.
No. He just throws himself completely on God's compassion, on God's mercy, even when he feels crushed. Possibly by guilt, too, it's implied. It tells us God's mercy isn't something we earn. It's fundamental, especially when we feel most unworthy.
So it's not about being perfect first.
Not at all. It's a huge relief if you feel that pressure. It invites you to lean into compassion, not worry about condemnation.
And you mentioned earlier how his suffering wasn't just one thing, physical, emotional, spiritual, all mixed up.
Precisely. That's the third piece of wisdom. Suffering often hits us as a whole person, body, mind, spirit. David's soul is vexed. His bones ache. His eyes fail. He doesn't separate these things neatly.
Which feels very true to life, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It's relevant to how we think about holistic health today, whether it's, you know, physical illness, mental health challenges, spiritual dryness. This psalm says your faith doesn't mean ignoring any of that. It means bringing your entire self, all the broken pieces included, into that spiritual space. Your whole self matters.
That's such an important reminder. And then that incredible turnaround you described, that confidence that emerges. What's the lesson there?
That's number four. Real confidence can actually follow radical honesty. That shift is key. After being completely brutally honest, not just about sins, but about his pain, his weakness, his weariness, then David finds this unshakable confidence. The Lord hath heard the voice of my weeping.
So the honesty wasn't about wallowing. It was a path through the despair.
Exactly. Confession here, in this broader sense of just laying it all bare, doesn't end in shame. It leads to restoration, to assurance. It suggests that when you stop pretending, when you're truly authentic about your state, that's often the turning point. That's where connection happens.
Okay, so that's the ancient wisdom. Powerful stuff. Now, let's bring it right into today. How does this apply to you listening now, trying to navigate life, maybe feeling that pressure to always be strong?
Well, maybe the biggest application is just that. You don't have to be strong all the time. David's tears, his vulnerability, they aren't shown as weakness. They're shown as honesty before God.
It's permission to fall apart.
It really is. In a culture that prizes resilience, sometimes to an extreme, this psalm says, it's okay if you're not resilient right now. It's okay to be broken. That vulnerability isn't failure. It could be a starting point for genuine connection. Drop the mask.
That's a huge weight off the shoulders for many people, I imagine. And it also means our prayers don't need to be perfect.
Exactly. Really. Second point, pray even when you don't have the words. David groaned, he wept. It wasn't a polished speech.
Right.
So if you're burnt out, sick, grieving, anxious, overwhelmed, don't wait until you feel spiritual enough or composed. You can pray broken. God hears the groans, the tears, even the silence when you just can't articulate anything.
Like those 3 a.m. moments when words fail.
Precisely. Your tears are a prayer. Your inability to speak is understood.
And that connection David felt, body, mind, spirit, that feels incredibly relevant for us today, too.
Absolutely. That's the third application. Your mental and physical health are spiritually significant. David's aching bones, troubled soul, failing eyes. It underscores that deep link.
Faith isn't separate from our physical or mental state.
Right. Faith doesn't mean ignoring suffering. It means bringing your whole self, including illness or anxiety, into your relationship with God.
Mm.
It challenges any idea that you need to somehow fix your body or mind before engaging spiritually. No, bring it all. It's all part of your experience and it's all seen.
That integration is key. Then there's the mercy aspect. How does that apply now?
That leads to the fourth point. Embrace mercy over the pressure of perfection. This psalm is such a relief if you're caught in striving, trying to earn approval from God, from others, even from yourself.
Mm-hmm.
David's hope isn't in his own righteousness. It's squarely in God's mercy. That truth hasn't changed. It frees you from the need to be flawless and allows you to rest in compassion.
And finally, that shift David experienced, hope appearing even while he was still suffering.
Yes, the fifth application. Hope can rise right in the middle of the pain. David finds assurance before his circumstances necessarily change. He trusts God is listening, God is working, even while he's still weeping, still vexed.
So you don't have to wait for things to get better to trust.
Exactly. You can trust God's presence and work even when you feel stuck in the pain, the illness, the regret. Hope isn't just for the destination. It can be found on the journey, even the hard parts.
So bringing this all together, How does understanding Psalm 6 like this actually encourage us today? How does it strengthen our faith, maybe even encourage obedience in a healthier way?
Well, it strengthens faith directly because David declares, "The Lord hath heard, the Lord will receive my prayer." That absolute conviction, right in the midst of agony, it reinforces our belief that God genuinely listens, that God is involved.
It makes faith less theoretical.
Exactly. It builds trust before the answers come. That idea that hope can rise mid pain, that shows faith growing through reliance, not just after rescue. It becomes a lived reality of being heard.
And how does that impact our actions, our willingness to align ourselves with God's ways, what we'd call obedience?
It changes the motivation entirely. When you grasp that mercy is central, that God invited this raw honesty, cry freely, confess honestly, trust deeply, without condemnation.
Yeah.
Then obedience stops being about fear. It's not about just following rules to avoid getting zapped. It becomes a response, a grateful, loving response to a God who sees all of you, weakness included, and meets you with compassion.
So confession leading to restoration, not shame. That makes you want to align with God.
Precisely. It fosters a willing obedience born from gratitude and trust, not obligation or fear. It's about relationship, responding to love received. It makes walking a good path feel like a natural outcome of experiencing that deep compassion.
This deep dive into Psalm 6, it really delivers such a profound message, doesn't it? That our grief, even our ugliest feelings are seen, our rawest prayers are heard, and that mercy is always, always there. It's like an invitation, really. Don't hide the pain. Bring it out into the light. Trust compassion over condemnation.
Try freely. Confess honestly. Trust deeply. You are absolutely not alone in that process.
So as we wrap up, here's something to think about. This exploration of Psalm 6 shows how unfiltered, raw prayer can paradoxically lead to deep confidence and connection. Thinking about your own life, what part of your struggles, maybe your hidden emotions or unspoken pain, might God be inviting you to bring into the light today, trusting in that same deep compassion David found.